Gaming Uncensored is brought to you by Colonel Duff. Duff, helping a random handicapped guy in the middle of nowhere. Only on Gaming Uncensored.
Controlling transmission.
Divided by 1,000 miles of barren wasteland, two men mysteriously linked by alien technology on a podcasting mission to boldly deliver video game news and views directly to your brain. This is Gaming Uncensored. Now, your Gaming Uncensored guides, the dynamic duo, the video game gurus, a man on wheels, and a Yeti with a modem, Jamie and Tommy.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. How you doing? My name is Jamie Jordan, and this is a brand new episode of Gaming Uncensored, and I want some VR pants. Tommy's sitting over there, and what's on the show this week, sir?
VR pants, apparently. That's wonderful. We've got some potential VR news we will get to a little bit later in the show. Possibly not just that VR pants. We got to talk about it. But we got mostly E3 rumors and predictions. That's going to be the bulk of the show. We're less than two weeks out from the start of E3 stuff. And so we're going to look at things that might happen, things we think are going to happen, things that are big dreams that probably won't happen around E3. And if we have time, we've got a few more things to talk about, including a new handheld from the publisher of Firewatch that has a crank and is in black and white and looks super cool. It's the most random thing, but it kind of looks amazing. And so that's the plan. We'll see how much of it we get to.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, sir, I think we should start with VR pants because I've had about 20 minutes to think about this, and I know what I want to see.
I like it. Let's start with VR pants because right here in the headline, because why not? Fabulous. And so before we get into all that good stuff, how you doing, man? It's been like not that long since we talked.
You know what's really cool? Like, I actually remember what we talked about on the last show. Yeah. Which is mind bending.
Yeah.
I'm doing great. I'm not playing mini games. I've been watching a fair bit of TV.
Nice.
And listening to music. I'll tell you about the music later, but I'll just tell you, I know your TV time is limited. But if you get a chance to watch something that I know you haven't been watching, one of the best shows on TV, one of the most well-known shows on TV, and it's on network TV, I don't know if you've ever seen The Blacklist with James Spader. That show's fantastic.
That's what I've heard. I've never seen an episode of it. So
I've been catching up with that thing on Netflix. That, like, this is like one of the guys at work compared it with intricate, like Game of Thrones intricate.
Nice.
And it's just really, really well done. And we love James Spader from the Boston Legal days, yes, as Alan Shore, and he has less hair now, but he's still really, really cool. One of the best actors out there, and The Blacklist is owning me right now. You got to check that out.
Very nice. I need to do that. I'm actually watching back through The Office for the umpteenth time, and I haven't quite gotten to James Spader in The Office yet, but James Spader is within, like, several episodes of where I'm currently at in The Office, and so I'll get a James Spader fix soon. A little bit different.
Speaking of The Office, we need that that's part of the reason I am continuing to watch The Blacklist, is because I have a feeling that maybe all of the NBC stuff is about to go on Netflix. Yep. Because I heard a little rumor that they are contemplating starting their own streaming service.
Yep, I've seen that too. That was one of the reasons, because I was kind of like, I need to watch a show. And I was trying to figure out what. I'm like, I'm going to watch The Office again at some point. And I saw that, like, oh, The Office may be going off Netflix. I was like, well, let's bump that up into queue and watch that one now before it leaves Netflix. So, yeah. I'll mention, this is not recent. I watched this a little while back. But another show on Netflix, is specifically a Netflix original, that is the craziest show I've ever seen, I think. It's pretty wild. Is Ozark? Have you seen anything about Ozark?
I have not. I see it on the thing. Like, I scroll by it.
So it's got Jason Bateman in it.
Right.
It's not a comedy. And so, you know, like, for me, Jason Bateman is Arrested Development. He's been in other stuff, too. But that's forever for me. That's his, like, main character. Jason Bateman, I think he's hilarious and I love him. But he basically plays the exact same person in every single show that he's on. And usually that's in a comedy role. In Ozark, like, he still plays that same guy. Like, he is Michael Bluth. But it's not a comedy. Like, it works. Like, it translates so well. It is this crazy show about money laundering and drug cartels. And it has a very, like, anti-hero Breaking Bad kind of vibe to it. Very much, like, inspired off of Breaking Bad. You can see it just through and through on the show. But way more over the top. Like, it's just the, like, craziest, like, ridiculous circumstances. It takes place in the Ozarks, as the name implies. They move from Chicago to the Ozarks to do this big money laundering scheme. And it is wild. It is not something ever for kiddies around ever. It is horribly profane and people getting heads blown off in pretty graphic detail and that kind of stuff. But it's pretty good. I was really surprised with how much I enjoyed it. 2 seasons, I think, on Netflix at this point.
For those of you that ever wonder what would happen if you gave us enough money that we didn't have to do anything else, I'm going to tell you what would happen if all we had to do was this. And I'm making a list of stuff. We love video games, and you know we play a ton of video games and do the same stuff we've always done. But there are several shows out there.
Yes.
And several shows that are fairly old that I would love to sit through and watch together and have, like, commentary episodes as we go.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones is one of those.
Yeah.
I'm currently working my way through season 6 of Game of Thrones. And I'm sitting around going, man, this would be really cool if Tommy was around and we could discuss this, because I think we could provide hours and hours and hours of content. I don't know if it would be good.
Yeah, who would be the audience for that? But we would have a good time.
So, yeah, if you ever wonder what would happen, it would be that.
Yes.
You would get TV, you would get games, you get politics, you get sports. And 4 of those things you people don't care about, but trust us, it would be fun.
It would be fun. Yeah, that's basically that's basically everything right there. So
yeah, and we would become our own podcasting network.
There you go. Our own podcasting network that is just all us. There's like 4 podcasts, but we host them all.
The Yeti and Wheels podcast.
There you
network.
Go. I like it.
That's it.
I dig it. Yeah.
See? This is why we need money. I want to start the Yeti and Wheels podcasting network. We can make that happen.
It's brilliant. I think it's great. I love
it. And I got another one. The Parenting Podcast.
Oh, there you go. Goodness gracious, isn't that the truth? Got lots of lessons there. We can get into that another day. Little girl's awesome, by the way. She's phenomenal.
Yes. Yes, and the reason we're doing this right now, this is in the middle of the day on a Monday, and she's currently sleeping.
Yes, we are. So. We are recording during nap time. The sexy sidekick is home because it's Memorial Day, and so she's taking a nap with the sexy sidekick right now, and I'm sneaking away to record a podcast, which is pretty convenient, handy time. So
nice.
All that said, should we talk about VR pants?
Yes.
Really quickly before we do that, thanks to the Patreon guys: Cabbage, Jose, Narc, Duff, Josh, Hector, Spider, Spencer, Kavash, Chad, Zeke, Chris, and Brigham. Thank you guys as always for your support. I know we've not been great about content. We've got a little bit recently, but you're about to get a lot because we've got E3 in just a couple weeks, and so we're working on plans around content for that. And so be looking out for lots and lots of content coming your way, both for just standard podcast feed. We'll be doing our whole bunch of shows like we always do, but we'll also have some Patreon specific stuff for you guys over at the Patreon that you can hopefully be catching up on for the next couple of months after E3, which I feel like is usually what happens. We do this big content dump at E3 each year, and then everybody has something to catch up on for a little while. So that's coming. If you're interested in participating with that, you can become a patron. Go over to gamingUncensored.com and click that become a patron link over on the right hand side of the page. We would love to take your money, put it to good use with some video game stuff over the summer.
Yes.
So all that being said, one of the things we will be spending money on eventually appears to be VR pants. So this comes from Sony. And so the idea here is that Sony is developing kind of haptic response clothing, wearables, whatever you want to call this for VR. The most obvious one is a glove. And so this talks about, a VR glove that would give you some haptic response. And you'd also imagine give you control as well, that you'd be able to, move your hand in real time, and it will track that and all that. That makes a ton of sense. We've been talking about VR gloves for a long time. Like, that's going to happen. That's not quite here yet, but we're getting closer and closer to that. And so
it happened in 1989.
Yes.
It just didn't take off. Yeah. Like, I was around one of those. Like, I had a neighbor kid out in the middle of the country in Hereford, Texas, that had a power glove, and it worked.
Yeah, it was. I had a power glove when I was a kid. The thing was, I remember playing Rad Racer with the power glove. Of like, you had to like make your hand into different shapes for like gas and brake and turning, and it was awful, but it was fun. Like, it was really cool. Yeah, it was absurd. So yeah, that technology has existed, putting it into VR and the responsiveness needed there. But I think the bigger part here to talk about is not necessarily the control aspect of it, but the haptic feedback part of it, that you can quote unquote feel stuff, you know, like that the inside of the glove will change texturally depending on what you're touching, or give you like a force feedback if you like you're putting your hand up against a wall or an object or something like that. Lots of questions on how you make that practical and where it doesn't like spaz out and like break your finger or something like that. But the technology idea there is cool. Like, it's obviously another step into that immersion that we haven't got to yet. Like, VR is super immersive, the most immersive way to interface with gaming technology at this point, I would argue. But there's still a lot to be done to make it more and more and more immersive, and this is obviously one of those places. So all that to say, and let's get into the VR pants side of this, is that this could expand, and that they're actually toying around with ideas that include other articles of clothing, such as hats and footwear, or pants or shirts that will have a haptic feedback quality to them as well. And so tell me, my friend, what would you do with some VR pants?
Okay, so a couple of things. I want you to clear your mind and just stick with me now. Because we're a wearing advisor. We already look like idiots, right?
Yes, yes.
So you might as well just throw everything else out the window. So here's what I want. I want a pair of Rhinestone Michael Jackson white gloves. I want that because fair. Why not? And I think the pants have to be MC Hammer parachute pants that can be made in any color that you would like with the appropriate slick-feeling fabric. That's what I think needs to happen, because you're gonna need to move. And let's be honest, those pants flow. They may not do anything else, but they flow.
Yeah.
So no. if you can imagine being a cross between 1980s Michael Jackson and 1990s MC Hammer with with goggles on your head. That's what I'm seeing. Can you see it with me?
I dig it. I think it's fabulous. And from a practical sense, like the MC Hammer pants thing, like you got to have space in the VR pants, right? For like all the haptics. Whatever you're doing to create that haptic feedback is not going to be something that could be done in like yoga pants. So you're going to have some space in there to make it work. So why not MC Hammer pants? Makes sense to me.
And I think it could get a lot better, because let's face it, I've only had about 20 minutes to put all this together. And I'm really thinking that there might be a Wheels VR clothing line coming, because like I came up with this in 20 minutes. Just imagine what would happen if I had like days.
Yeah, there's the ticket. Yeah, I think you got it. The Wheels VR clothing line. I love it.
I like it.
That cracks me up. That's phenomenal. While we're on the topic, if you're following along at home with the show notes, we're towards the end. We'll pop back over to the E3 stuff here in just a second. But and maybe this is something that we get hints of around E3. We already know Sony's not going to be at E3, but they're going to be doing E3 adjacent stuff. And so PlayStation VR is obviously something that they're still investing in, still care about quite a bit. And so the VR pants from Sony, probably a little bit farther off. We might get hints of a VR glove, new control schemes. Some other things that could possibly be coming, rumors now, about PlayStation VR for the next generation, for the PlayStation 5 era, include things like eye tracking, which is something that everybody wants to get to. Nobody has gotten to yet in the mainstream VR world, but that's going to be a huge, huge deal, where the headset not only tracks the motion of your head, but tracks the motion of your eyes, so you can look in different places and focus. It's one of the limiting features of the immersion of VR right now, so that would obviously be a huge thing. Then, of course, wireless headsets, which is a big deal. And then other interface things with the PlayStation 5, just how it's going to take care of the higher processing and everything else. PSVR on the PlayStation 5 could be like a massive, massive thing.
I really feel like for VR to do what it needs to do, we're going to need, and I don't know how to make this work practically, but we're really going to need server farms worth of computing power.
Yeah.
Because what we're doing now is cute. You and I have a VR rig, you have a VR rig, and it's cute, and like it's fun, and we're so glad to have all this stuff. Thank you, Duff. But the power required to do what everybody wants to do, meaning the eye tracking and the head tracking and all of this stuff, every time you add something, it requires more power and more processing.
Yes.
And that's going to take multiple servers. And I don't know how we're going to get there in a timely fashion.
Yeah, I definitely hear you there. It's going to be progressive. We've had now mainstream VR out for, 4 years at least,
yeah,
somewhere right in
something
there,
something like that, yeah.
And so, like, we're seeing the progression, but like the Vive headsets that we have are the same ones, they're the original release Vive headsets. we haven't gotten to the point that there's massive new technological changes. We've gone through incremental technological changes. So a Vive Pro obviously has better optics, and we've got the wireless adapter now, and so there's progress being made towards some of these big goals. And I feel like that's probably what it's going to continue to be. I don't think we're going to necessarily see like this moment where we jump into a new era of VR that we're like, oh, now we've kind of arrived. Like, it's going to sneak up on us. And I think getting to your point that the cloud computing support side of that, that's going to be a part of gaming and the next generation. We already know this. We talked about it on the last show. Sony and Microsoft teaming up together. So not only do we know this, we actually know Sony's framework, at least that they're looking for, infrastructure to make this work, is going to go through Microsoft's Azure system. And so it's growth in an incremental way that is just going to continue to be like, oh yeah, VR is a legit thing still, and it's better than it was 4 or 5 years ago because of these little additions, including now cloud computing being supported by, you know, next gen graphics processors and everything that we're going to see in the PlayStation 5. And I really think, again, I think the PlayStation 5 could be another breakthrough for virtual reality. But already, I just looked up the numbers because I was curious. We talk about this every so often when we talk about PlayStation VR. PlayStation VR is over 4 million units sold at this point, which, you know, and the install base of the PlayStation 4 is, I want to say we talked about it being like 3 or 4% or something like that. But to compare that to the Oculus and the HTC Vive, based on the numbers that we know about those are combined at a little over 2 million. And so the PlayStation VR is about double the pace of the two primary high-end headsets on the PC. Now, Oculus and HTC are both releasing mid-range headsets that are probably a little bit more comparable to the PlayStation VR, because PlayStation VR isn't the high-end Oculus Rift or HTC Vive level. But the trick isn't necessarily that it has to be super high-end, because that's not approachable. The thing is, it needs to be high-end enough to be immersive and be approachable, which I think is the balance that Sony has found with PSVR and why it's been a pretty significant success at this point. I think it would be hard to argue that it's not been successful for a still pretty niche part of the gaming community and a pretty niche device.
Well, and I think the key for them on the PlayStation 5, I don't know if this is a thing, we don't own the PSVR. So it may already be a thing, which, by the way, if somebody wants to give us one of those, we'll take that.
Absolutely.
Send us an email, and we'll totally take one off your hands. But I think the key with the PSVR is going to be the PlayStation 5 plus another dedicated processing box.
Possibly, yeah.
Because the reason that the Vive and the Oculus work the way they do is because we have these monster machines to put them on. And the machines that you and I have and the machines that we built for other people, and the reason I'm bringing this up is because I had a text discussion with Evie this morning. She's working on some really, really cool browser-based stuff. Like, I think I showed you before. And it's just gotten a whole lot cooler. I mean, it's a massive, massive change with what she's doing. And there's actual movable avatars with crazy physics and all kinds of stuff. And she... I looked at it this morning, and she had like 8 avatars running off of the rig that we put together for her. And I immediately said, I need to find some like temperature software for that computer so we can figure out what it's doing. And she goes, I don't know why it's running fine. And I said, yeah, but you don't know how hot it is. And so back to the PSVR, the reason you need a separate box is I think it's a lot to put on one box for heat and processing and everything else.
Sure.
I think for it actually to work, you need more than one box.
Yeah. Which, I was trying to remember. I felt like that might have been a thing with PlayStation VR. That does come with another box that, like, you plug it into and it kind of runs through that box. I don't remember if that's true or if it adds much in terms of processing or whatever. But whatever, it's a valid point. But the more that we can offload some of the things to cloud support, the less that you have to rely on local processing. And so, obviously, you're never going to get away from that with, or at least not never, but not anytime soon, you're not going to get away from that local processing with VR because it is so processing intensive. But it can be supported. You could find things that you could offload onto the cloud and to make it run, more efficiently at least, and then people could push it harder and you still need another box, whatever. So. But VR is going to be a topic that we're going to talk about for a while. I don't know if it's going to be a big topic at E3, honestly. I'm kind of curious because I feel like Sony is the main, big name that's pushing VR. As much as Oculus and HTC do, like, they're still so reliant on third parties for VR content. That's the difference between them and Sony. It's kind of like the PC gaming show at E3. We love it, but it's always pretty disjointed because there's no kind of sole publisher behind PC games, and so you don't get this kind of unified messaging that you get with a sole publisher. The same thing is true for VR. Without Sony being at E3, I don't know what we're going to see, at least structured wise, about VR. There will be some. And so now getting back into the E3 side of things, let me first go by the show notes, gamingunsensored.com. The first link there is to an E3 schedule that was put together by a Reddit user named Absolute Magnitude. So thank you, Absolute Magnitude, for this Google spreadsheet. That's actually really great. It just has, kind of everything that's happening leading up to and then after E3 with times, what the company is, and then links to either their Twitch or YouTube pages where you can stream the content, which is super useful. But in that, there are a few VR things that pop up in there. But bigger picture, right now, we're just going to talk through kind of what's going on at E3, and so we've mentioned all this kind of piecemeal in several shows before as the news came out. But we'll go through just really, really briefly what the schedule looks like, and then we'll get deeper into rumors and expectations and that kind of stuff. And so, big stuff starts on Saturday, June 8th. That's when EA is starting their EA Play thing, but they're not having a press conference this year, as we've talked about, but we know they're going to be showing games, including new Star Wars, and we'll talk about that here in a little bit. So that gets started on Saturday. Sunday is when we get the Xbox briefing. That's probably going to be the newsiest thing from E3, I would imagine. We'll see new console there, almost certainly. We also get Bethesda on that Sunday, and then we get Devolver Digital, the, quote, big fancy press conference, which should be a trip, as Devolver typically is. Then on Monday, we get the PC gaming show. We get Ubisoft. We get Square Enix. And so those are kind of the big names there. We also get Upload VR is doing a E3 showcase. And so that's where we get a little bit of VR content in there. AMD is doing an event talking about hardware and gaming and that kind of stuff. Tuesday, Nintendo's in their same spot they're always at. We've got the Nintendo Direct at 11 on Tuesday morning. And then their Treehouse Live after that. And that's when we get into the actual show. Show floor days, which includes some Call of Duty stuff happening, some esports stuff around Nintendo and other publishers. One I'll point out really quick: on Thursday, CD Projekt Red is doing an event that's called The Past, Present, and Future. We know Cyberpunk 2077 is going to be at E3 in some capacity. I'm interested to see if it shows up in one of the big press conferences, which would really be Microsoft, I guess, would be where it shows up in a big way, or if they wait and hold off onto it until the very end of the week. So,
can we skip directly to Thursday?
Let's, I mean, yeah.
Like, the rest of that stuff is cool. But yeah, give me some of that.
Yeah. So let's start there, and we'll talk about some of the games, rumors, and games we're looking forward to, and that kind of stuff. But to me, Cyberpunk 2077 may be the game I'm looking forward to most at E3 this year. I really hope they bring it big. I want to see a lot of it.
I think that's going to be big, but I think the key to your phrasing there is E3 this year desperately needs a big, big, big title. And it's probably going to be Cyberpunk 2077. But if it's not, it needs to be something else.
Yeah.
Because, like, we haven't had good Mass Effect. We haven't had BioShock. We haven't had any of that stuff that is capable of driving a show by itself for a while. And I feel like that needs to happen this year.
Yeah.
This would be the ultimate year for Valve to pop up and go, here. Here's Half-Life 3. It's not going to happen, but that would make E3 roll if you had, you know, a Valve game, whether it's Half-Life or Portal or something else, and then Cyberpunk. That makes the whole week.
Yeah. I would 100% agree with that. And honestly, like, it feels like E3 2019 is already down because of just Sony not being there, of lacking that presence. A big game like that would go a long ways to kind of forgetting about that big hole. So some other games, while we're on that kind of topic, just throw out some other names of games that could be that at E3. A question: can Halo be that? We're going to see Halo. I would be shocked if we don't get a good chunk of Halo Infinite at E3. Can it be that big, showstopper game at this point?
No. And that's, I think everybody is tired of Halo. I mean, we love Halo. Halo's great. But I think everybody's tired.
Yeah.
I think it has to be an IP that is either new or that we haven't seen in a long, long, long time.
Yeah, I think I agree with you on that. Halo's a tricky one because it has been, it feels like there's been a lapse in like canon Halo. I don't want to say canon Halo because that's not the right way to say it, but like main Halo games. Like, it feels like we've had a couple of like offshoot kind of Halo games recently that haven't got the same traction. Like, it feels like they're trying to make Halo Infinite the like next like big name in the franchise. Maybe I just like, they're gonna have to show me something bigger than what Halo has been, and I don't know what that is. Like, I can't say, and if they do, blah blah blah. And what I imagine is going to be like Halo Battle Royale mode, you know, or whatever. And that's not going to get me excited.
No.
But there are things that they could do to get me really, really excited about Halo Infinite. I think it could be. I'm with you. I don't think it probably will be, but I think I'm a slightly more optimistic. What about Beyond Good and Evil 2?
It could be that if they have enough to make it be that.
Yeah. So we saw a lot of it last year, way more than we anticipated seeing last year, but it still wasn't that.
If it's live and people can play it for like an hour and a half, then yeah, it has that potential to be that.
Yeah. And then maybe, and this is happening early, but Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order? Could it be?
I can't even gauge where to go with Star Wars at this point.
I know, me neither.
Because it's so completely unpredictable.
Yeah.
It's either really, really good or really, really bad.
Yeah. And it's been more bad than good historically.
And I just don't know where to go. And the thing is, this is going to sound really bad because we got a lot of young guys listening to this show, so please don't take offense to this. But we just hired a new guy at work, right? And he's 25, and he graduated high school in, like, 2012.
Right.
And so we've been having a lot of discussions at work. And one of the things that came up was when The Last Jedi came out, he went back and watched all of the Star Wars movies. He had never seen them up to that point. Never seen The Matrix, never seen some other stuff.
I'm just dying inside that, over here.
That is legendary at this point. And so the stuff, my point is, the stuff that we love, that really makes the needle move for us, these people in this time period, they don't go the same way.
Yeah.
It's not the same type of stuff. It's very different. They're watching different, you know this, you have students.
Yeah.
They're watching different stuff. They're playing different stuff. They do vastly different types of music. I don't know that the problem with Star Wars is whatever they have to do to make it appealing to those people, we're going to hate.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. So what I keep coming back to is how much, like what you're saying about like students I'm around all the time, how much they're into the Battle Royale world and that kind of stuff and that Fortnite and Apex Legends, which is kind of the grown-up Battle Royale now, it feels like, are big deals in Apex Legends specifically here because it's EA. But I just don't know. I have in my head, because we talked about Jedi Fallen Order in kind of maybe an Uncharted kind of a format. And that's like, I know it's probably not going to be that, but my hope is that it's exactly that. Like it's Star Wars as Uncharted. And that I think could be like a showstopper. I think that could be a really, really big deal for everybody. Like I think it could be really, really cool. What Sony did with Spider-Man, you know, like that kind of narrative driven action approach. It could be a big deal.
Uncharted Star Wars is basically where the movies have been going for like the last three.
Yes.
So I think that's totally reasonable. Because the last three movies have that vibe.
Yeah.
But can you execute that?
Yeah. Big question I don't have an answer to.
The reason that we don't see more games like Uncharted is not because people haven't tried. It's because the only people that can execute it are Naughty Dog.
Yeah.
And so that's the problem, is we have a handful of studios, and on that list, like, I'm counting them on the hand. We've got Rockstar, we've got Naughty Dog, we've got Quantic Dream, we've got Valve.
BioWare,
maybe.
In their heyday, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we've got maybe five studios that know how to execute when they have something that's good.
Yeah.
If Cyberpunk is as good as advertised, CD Projekt Red will be one of those five.
Yeah, they've proven they could do it with one franchise. You gotta give us more than one franchise.
Right. So, and that's the problem, is in the entire industry, there are less than 10 studios that can really take a vision and execute it. And I would say, if you want to throw somebody else on that list, the only other person that comes to mind is Ken Levine, and he's off on an island somewhere doing his thing because he did what he wanted to do with BioShock.
God bless him, man.
That's the issue that we have, is that there's a lot of people out there, but not many people know how to execute at this point.
Yeah, that's fair. Really quick, I brought up BioWare. I do want to throw a BioWare game in there, too, that we're likely to see at E3, which is Dragon Age 4. We got the super little teaser at the Game Awards that didn't tell us anything. I would anticipate, I would hope, that EA is going to bring at least some Dragon Age 4. And for us, at least, that could be that level of excitement. The first Dragon Age was so great, and then it's kind of been since then. Dragon Age 4 could be something, at least for us, we get pretty geeked out about.
I'm going to be honest, and this is awful for me to admit this because I host a gaming show. I have not touched a single Dragon Age game since the original.
Yeah.
I have Dragon Age 2. It's there.
Yeah.
I can get Inquisition, but I really don't have a desire to play either one of them.
Inquisition's free on, not free, but is part of the vault on the EA Origins access. So the cheap vault. That's not even the expensive EA Origins access at this point. It's there, but I'm with you. I played some of both of them. I didn't finish either one of them. Dragon Age Inquisition got me a lot more hooked than Dragon Age 2 did, which just wasn't anything. That was kind of a bummer. But the first one was so good. Like, I really loved that first Dragon Age game. It was, yeah. So that's why I hope on Dragon Age 4 is that they could kind of recapture that magic.
Dragon Age, I kind of want to go back to.
Yeah.
And that's... And to be honest with you, I think the key with Dragon Age, it kind of has that same thing going for it that Game of Thrones has going for it. The reason Game of Thrones is such a huge deal is everybody loves medieval stuff, right?
Yes.
Like, everybody loves that medieval vibe, but it's so hard to pull off.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. And when it's done right, like, it's, yeah, a huge thing. I feel like the first Dragon Age was done right. At least in the gaming world, it was a huge thing. And they kind of have been toying around with the formula too much since. Dragon Age 4, if they can kind of get back to the magic of the first one, I think it'll be great. While we're talking about software, I'm just going to run through the other big publishers of what we know or are likely going to see. With Square, for us, I think it's the Final Fantasy VII remake that I still just need more details about. Like, it's darn pretty, and we saw that in the latest State of Play from Sony. But I really want to hear what their approach to the episodic release is going to be. I want to hear about combat system mechanics. Like, I want to hear about materia. Like, this is one of my all-time favorite games. Like, I'm ready for details on it. I you can make it really pretty, and I care a lot about that. Like, I want a really pretty Final Fantasy VII remake, but if it sucks to play, you know, like, then I'm not going to be excited about it. So I need details on it.
Yeah, and I think you're going to get them. I just don't think we're going to like any of them.
I fear, like, that you're right.
I don't... You're going to get them, and you're not going to like anything that you hear. And I have this fear, and I can bring this up to you because we have several guys that are in our... whether they like it or not, they are coming into our group. I'm talking about Spider and Cabbage and Firestorm and all those guys, Josh, that is on the round table. All those guys are slowly creeping into the environment where you and I live and have for quite a while, meaning that we're old and we like what we like, and there's not a whole lot of what we like right now.
Yeah.
And I don't know that that's going to change.
Yeah.
And so it's about the execution, and it's about the direction of software.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's, for us, back to your point, what gaming is going to be in the next couple of years is more about direction than anything else. And how do people like you and I stay engaged enough not to just be those people that are like, back in our day when they did awesome stuff. Like, that's the thing for me. How do we do that?
Yeah, I hear you. Really quickly, just because I want to squeeze in a few more software things, and then we'll get into some of the fun rumors. Microsoft, I think Halo's the big question mark there. What do we see with Halo? I don't know what else they could show that's good. Another Forza, right? Well, I bet we'll see Forza, because we see Forza every year at E3 with Microsoft. We know Gears 5 is coming. I'm sure we'll see tons of that. Bethesda, I'm really curious to what they have, how much they talk about Fallout 76. Are they going to try to do like a reboot, a relaunch of Fallout 76? Are they just moving on at this point?
Can I be honest? And this is going to sound weird, but hang with me for a second. I hope we don't really see anything from Bethesda.
Yeah.
Because we know what their big titles are.
Yep.
And we know they're not ready yet.
Yep.
So just shut up and do your thing.
Yeah.
Like, shut up and, like, I hate to pull something from the news, but remember when what's-her-face, the politician, told LeBron to shut up and dribble? Yeah. Shut up and make games! Like, that's it! Shut up and make games!
Yeah.
Like, another thing that that Mike Wilbon says a lot that I love is, I don't care what you say, I don't want to hear you talk, just play.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I'm at with Bethesda.
I agree. My one caveat would be, if you've got like something with Starfield specifically that you can give us a better taste of what it is, I would like to see that. We know that in the Elder Scrolls 6, which they announced both of last year, aren't anytime soon. But assuming that Starfield is the closer of the two, like, I just want some details about what that is, because we know very little. We know it's space, but outside of that, we don't really have any clues at this point. And so that's the one exception I give to that. But overall, I would agree. I hope that Bethesda conference is like 30 minutes long. You know, like, it just really, I don't want to sit and listen to Fallout 76 and Elder Scrolls Blades for an hour and a half. Doom may be fun. I imagine we'll see a good bit of Doom there, but outside of that. We mentioned Beyond Good and Evil 2. We'll get into a rumor here in just a second, or a couple rumors with Yubi that could be fun. PC gaming show, who knows? Be super fun if Valve showed up at that. We speculate that every year. Man, if they gave us new Portal, or obviously Half-Life 3, I'm never assuming Half-Life 3 is a thing, but if they gave us either one of those during the PC game show, like we say every year, that would automatically give the PC game show like this massive credibility. Nintendo, we're going to see lots of Mario Maker 2. I'm assuming we're going to see Link's Awakening, the remake from that. I would love to see a little bit more Metroid. We know that the development of that got pushed back, and so I wouldn't anticipate seeing any of that. Or, and this is, come on, Nintendo, please. I want more Breath of the Wild content. I do. I don't care that game's going to be 2 years old at this point. Like, give me more Breath of the Wild content.
Give me more Breath of the Wild content, and all of, I don't even really care what the content is. It's more like, just give me a reason to go back.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, give me a reason to go back and fire it up and be excited again, because there is nothing like that game out there anywhere.
Yeah.
We are 2 years out from that, and there's nothing.
Yeah,
like there's nothing.
I would play nothing else. I would stop Red Dead right now in the middle of it, go back to Breath of the Wild in a heartbeat. Yeah, give us content there.
What's there's guys cringing now because we're gonna be playing Red Dead the old 2025. Give me that. Let's go.
Yep. All right. So let's quickly talk about some of the fun rumor stuff that we may or may not see, whether these are good or terrible ideas. Several from Yubi. And so I, in the maybe the order of what I think is most likely, but I really don't know. I think at least a couple of these are a toss-up. The rumor that's been flowing for a while, that seems like it's likely is Watch Dogs 3 showing up. And I would be about that. The first two games were fun. I played them both. Of course, Watch Dogs, the original, had the massive amount of hype, and it didn't live up to that. But it was a fun game. Watch Dogs 2 didn't take itself nearly as seriously, which made it pretty fun. So I would be all about Watch Dogs 3. The rumor I saw is that it'll take place in London, which would also be super cool. So I would dig that. Assassin's Creed. We know that there's not an Assassin's Creed, at least Ubisoft said there's not an Assassin's Creed coming this year, which is perfectly fine. They've also said, I think, or at least hinted towards, they wouldn't be showing anything, and that's a lot of these rumors that these companies have denied at this point, but I'll believe it when I see it or don't see it kind of thing. But we mentioned this last show, that the rumor is that the next Assassin's Creed is going to be Viking-based, and I would love to see a taste of that. Assassin's Creed is one of those franchises to me that's like redeemed itself in this massive, massive way. And so I would love seeing a little bit of Assassin's Creed Vikings during the Ubi show.
Yeah, they are another company that I would really love if they would surprise me. Like, if you give me a good Splinter Cell, I mean it. Like, I'm not talking about, like, the last four Splinter Cells.
Yep.
I'm talking about going back to the original, like, Splinter Cell and doing a Splinter Cell thing. I would take that from you. Because the thing about UB is they have a lot of really great franchises.
Yep.
That are just in a vault somewhere.
Yep.
And all they have to do is bring out a couple of them. If we get Beyond Good and Evil 2 and something else, we're going to be happy with UB.
Yeah, I agree. Splinter Cell's the other one I was going to bring up that's being rumored right now, that there's a new Splinter Cell that they'll show. So, yeah, any of those would be exciting. I agree. I think I know this for sure at this point. The third party publisher I look forward to most at E3 now is Ubi. That they have games I want to play, and it's really that simple. And so any of those games I would want to play. And the ones we've talked about, of course, Beyond Good and Evil 2, we've talked about quite a bit. Square, we know, is working on an Avengers something. We don't know what that Avengers something is, but it would be really fascinating to see if they show up with their Avengers project at E3 this year and give us a bunch of details on that.
I don't want that.
Do you not?
Like, I really don't.
It's one of those that I think has a much better chance to suck, but if they do it well, would be amazing.
Yeah, but how do you do that?
You got me.
With all of those different heroes and with all the, you know, like, seriously, how do you even have decent controls with a game like that?
Yeah, I don't know. But if you do it right, if you can pull it off, it could be, especially obviously as huge as the Avengers are. Like, if you put out a solid Avengers game, that could blow up. We've seen superhero games have a kind of renaissance alongside the superhero movie renaissance. Obviously, Batman, the Arkham series we love. Spider-Man just had a really, really fantastic game again. So,
man, we still got to play that.
We do. That could possibly be our E3 game. I don't know.
Oh, wow.
Just throwing that out there. Something to think about. Yeah. So we'll discuss that more. But that could definitely be it. That would be a lot of fun. So before we talk about that kind of stuff, though, Rocksteady, mentioning comic book based games. What are they doing? are we going to get maybe Justice League from Rocksteady and Avengers from Square? Who knows? But there's a chance that we see something from Rocksteady as well. Ninja Theory, we know, got acquired by Microsoft. That was news last year at E3. So what are they doing? What are we going to get from Ninja Theory? Don't know. But that could be a big thing. Here's one, and I'm excited to say this one out loud just to get your reaction to it. This would be during the Microsoft show. There's a rumor that Fable is coming back.
Microsoft, let me just say this right now. as clearly as I know how to say this, and I'm going to slow down my speech, and I'm going to calm down just so I can sound as intelligible as possible. I love you, but no. Like, no. I hate saying that because Fable, what Fable was when we were growing up, what Fable was purported to be, made our little minds work.
Yes.
And all of the things that they wanted to do with Fable, just, it made me happy thinking about it.
Yes.
And then it didn't happen.
No.
And here we are in 2019, and I still want all of that stuff. And the closest thing to all of that stuff that we have ever had is Skyrim. And now I don't want to see somebody else try it.
Right. Yeah, I think that's the thing, is that all of those things that Fable promised 15 years ago or whatever, it's been a long, long time, have been realized. Maybe not fully in a singular game, though several games have done a lot of it. I would put The Witcher in that category that does a lot of those things. But those elements are now kind of mainstream game expectations. Your choices matter, that the world changes, that you can affect things, that your character will be different depending on, you know, not only dialogue choices, but other choices that you make or what kinds. I think if you're even playing Red Dead, has tons of those elements of what Fable purported to be way back in the day. And so now the thing that made Fable this kind of novel, interesting thing, doesn't anymore. it's not a thing.
Can we back up on Red Dead? Because Red Dead's a great point.
Yeah.
Because I saw the end of what's available on the YouTube channel at Red Dead a couple weeks ago. And one of the most intriguing things to me, and this is probably going to blow your mind, was when you checked into the hotel. You checked into the hotel and you got a room. At first, I couldn't figure out why you did it. But then when you did, and you paid for the room and you went upstairs and you had the option, you had the room and you had the option for the bath. And then that lady pops her head in the door. And I'm sitting here watching this totally enthralled because what we wanted from Fable back in the day, and what we still want on a very, very consistent basis, and this is the problem, is nobody does it consistently, is that.
Yeah.
That, Red Dead is great, but for that 30-minute section of you checking into that hotel, you're living in the world.
Yes.
That section, I can't tell you what it is, and maybe you can help me narrow it down, but you checked into the hotel and you had all the stuff, and I thought to myself, as you went and you got in the bathtub and ours is getting cleaned up, this section with the hotel is what I envision 20 or 30 or 40 years from now in a holodeck and walking through that and having those options and being completely enveloped in that environment. It's that. And that's what drove Fable all of those years, was the potential of being enveloped.
Yes.
And Red Dead is great, but I'm telling you, from just that 30-minute section, I don't know why, but I was totally enthralled for a half hour.
Yeah. I think it's exactly what you said there. It's because it's a living world. Like, it feels like a living world. That's what Fable promised to us and never was really able to execute, in part because it was way ahead of its time. Like, what Fable aspired to do is where it knew gaming was going. And we got there, like, for the most part. There's still ways we can get more immersive and everything else. But again, that's why in 2019, I'm like, what space does Fable have to fill at this point? Like, that novelty is now achieved. It's not novel anymore. It's expected. And so what are you trying to pull off with a new Fable?
Can I ask you, just to back up to that?
Yeah.
Why you chose to check in the hotel and do that little vignette?
It's been a while.
All that stuff.
Yeah, it's been a while since I did that, so I don't remember exactly. But it was in Strawberry, right? That it was like just cruising through Strawberry and stopped. And I want to say it was just something like I had lost my hat or my health was low or something like that. And so I was just like trying to like just like it was just a restoration thing, you know? Like it was just a like here's a break. I know I'm going to be doing some like mission work over here, so I just need to like recoup. Which is the whole idea of having like hotels spread across the game world, is that you have that kind of rejuvenation thing. How I ended up in the bathtub, I have no clue. Like, I was just clicking around, and then suddenly this woman comes in, and you're like, "Oh, hi!" You know, like, where is this going? It suddenly got very Witcher-ish right there. So, speaking of living worlds, and so it didn't get like I was expecting it to like go like all the way like raunchy right there, and it didn't. It kind of stayed fairly clean.
I was trying to figure out if you had the option, and I think that's what it is. If you want to put it in a nutshell, is there was 18 different ways that section could go.
Yeah,
like you walking through the hotel. And I noticed as you got upstairs and as you got to the table and chairs that are outside of your room, you picked up a cigarette card. And, like, it was very, very well, like, the entire environment was extremely well put together.
Yeah.
And there were 18 different ways that could go. And as I was watching that section, the reason I was intrigued was in my brain, I was going, okay, this could get dirty or it could not, or Arthur could get mad and shoot her in the head. Yeah. And then we've got to like run. And like, that's the thing is you're watching this and you're like, I don't know which way this is going to go. And that's what got me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, like, I don't know what kind of options that you had there because, as I've told you before, for some reason, all of that stuff is really hard to see on my television the way they have it set up.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the thing for me is just not knowing where it was going to go.
Yeah, which I think is totally fair. That's part of the fun of gaming. And so really quick, we're out of time here, but we're going to go a bit long because I got to throw this in. Just one more rumor that's always floating around E3 and this year's no different. But it's Rockstar. We're talking about Rockstar, and so let's talk about this. Is that we'll get a big Rockstar announcement at E3. The less, at least for us, I would imagine, exciting one that's floating around is that Bully 2 will be announced, which Bully was fine. I never got super into it, but played a chunk of it. Or, of course, the other big one is Grand Theft Auto 6 that we know they're working on. We don't know what it's going to be. But coming out with Grand Theft Auto 6, at least just a teaser that gives us a hint at location and maybe protagonist and that kind of thing, could be one of those things that blows up the week. That would be like the news coming out, even if it's only a teaser that's, you know, 15 seconds long or something like that. That could be enough to really kind of steal the show.
I want, and this is probably, you talk about games that are large in scale. And I say this not playing Grand Theft Auto V, which I know you love, but I haven't really had the, appropriate space to play Grand Theft Auto V. It's just not gonna be easy to play anywhere that I play it. But for Grand Theft Auto VI, I have this vision in my head in that I hope it's not just one location. Like, I'm dreaming of an international Grand Theft Auto.
Ooh.
Like you start here, and then you end up in London, and then you end up in Ireland or Scotland.
Yeah.
Or like a jet-setting type of Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, so...
The scale at which that could happen, this is what we were just talking about. If they could pull that off, it would be the first time it's ever happened anywhere.
Yeah. Let me say, because if you've been listening to the show for a long time, you've heard me say this several times of what I want from Grand Theft Auto. Because I really enjoyed the first two Grand Theft Auto games, Grand Theft Auto and Grand Theft Auto 2, that were the top-down thing. But my favorite of those early, before pre-Grand Theft Auto 3 games was the London, I think it was 1969, probably just in the inappropriateness of it. But whatever it was, there was a London version of the original Grand Theft Auto that was that top-down thing. And that was my favorite. I really, really enjoyed that game. Arcadey, super hard. I didn't get very far in it at all, but I played it a ton, and it was really fun. And so for me, I've always dreamt of the modern Grand Theft Auto, post-Grand Theft Auto 3, going back to London. Even that time period would be cool. But now, like you mentioning that, I want Grand Theft Auto Europe. Like, I want London, and I want Paris, and I want Berlin or Rome, or, you know, like, I want that you get, like, 2-3 major European cities. I kind of also would love to see, like, London and Tokyo and Beijing or whatever, you know, like, you could go, like, that scale too. I feel like that may be too much, but I think the Europe thing, man, you got me excited. Like, that triggers something in my head. Guys, that sounded super cool.
I don't know if you guys can hear, but our little brains are, like, both of us are sitting here, and our little brains are exploding because they're thinking of all the possibilities. This goes back to what we were just talking about with Fable, Red Dead, and all of that. This is what we want out of games. It's about the... To circle back, I think what is bothering me about gaming right now is there's not a whole lot of imagination. There's not a whole lot of like, it's all predictable. There's nothing that is like a Mass Effect or a BioShock or something that is way out there that we've never seen before. Just to circle back to the beginning of the show, that's what's missing.
Yeah.
Because I just feel like that whatever comes is going to be more of what we've already got, because people are trying to capitalize and people are trying to make money. And my imagination is not engaged. And a European Grand Theft Auto, or even, not even a European Grand Theft Auto, but a hemisphere-wide Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah.
Like, my mind is just going places. And it's the same deal with Cyberpunk. That's why we're excited about Cyberpunk. Because it could go 8 zillion different ways. We have no idea what it's going to be. We have no idea where it's going to go. We have no idea how it's going to play. To me, just to wrap up the show with a bow, what's missing right now is imagination. And that's that's what has always driven gaming for me.
And specifically on what we've been talking about, what E3 can deliver on when done well. And it's always my hope coming out of E3 is we get that thing that like triggers us in that way, that gives us that kind of little kid excitement that we want from gaming. And so I'm hoping that we get that. We've got probably one more regular show before E3. We'll be doing obviously all of our E3 stuff. I'm anticipating there's probably going to be several news things that break over the next week or so that we'll have to discuss. But the real fun part of E3 are those glimpses at something that's either unexpected or that surpasses what you even thought for a certain title or franchise. Those things can't happen beforehand. Those things happen in the moment. Those things happen with those announcements. And so, yeah, that's my hope for E3 is we get that exact same thing that you're talking about, that world of imagination. I feel like we're getting into Willy Wonka land now.
That's the thing, though. Like, it's funny you bring up Willy Wonka. I would play a Willy Wonka game. I'd play that.
Isn't that the truth? Where is that thing at? That could be phenomenal. It'd be so cool.
I really would. This show in particular, this episode of this show, I really want to hear from you guys on the Facebook page and you guys on the Twitter. I want you to talk to us about what is in your imagination. I don't want to hear about Apex. I don't want to hear about new Fortnite. I don't, like, what do you, when you are gaming, when you're thinking about games, when you're thinking about TV, what do you imagine that you want to see? That, to me, that's the magic of E3.
Yep.
And we have several different avenues for you to post that, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, the website. We have all of those. I want to hear from you guys, especially after this episode. And I heard from a guy on Twitter the other day that said, he literally said, I've been lurking for years. I've never said anything, but I've been listening. And you guys are great. And I know there's a zillion of you guys out there that just don't ever say anything. And for me, this episode is all about imagination. I want to hear from you and what you think about.
I love it. All that said, we've ran long. Go by the show notes, gamingcensored.com. No big releases. This is a pretty dead time in gaming releases. But you can see those over there. Plus a couple of things we missed. I teased the new handheld. We're not going to be able to get into that right now, but do go by the show notes if you haven't seen that. It's a random little thing that actually kind of looks like a blast. And so see that if you haven't seen that yet. It's pretty cool. Or go by Twitter. I did tweet about it, and so you can see that over at the Twitter at podcastgu.
And for you kids out there that aren't necessarily old like us, and you're listening to all the new music and playing all the new games that I've been complaining about for the last hour and however many minutes this is, I want to add something to the old man music tour.
Uh-huh.
And that is Alanis Morissette's Jagged Little Pill.
Yes.
I have a really, really quick story about this. I believe that was the first album that my sister bought that disappeared out of my house. Like, I think I have heard, I had heard every song on that track, but up on that album, but up until last week was the first time that I got to really sit down and listen to it critically. That's one of the best albums ever made.
It's fantastic.
Production wise.
Yep.
It is unbelievable. If you want some old man music, go to Spotify, go listen to it. It is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And do not listen to it on some Beats headphones. Don't do that. Find some good sound. It's great.
It is fantastic. It is one of my top five albums of the 90s, and I came of age in the 90s, and so I love 90s music. That's like my heyday. I know yours too. It's phenomenally good. Really great album.
The funny thing is it disappeared out of my house, and we're talking about an album that literally only has one F-bomb.
Yeah.
Like, there's one explicit track on the entire thing, and it disappeared out of my house. It's really good. So if you get a chance, go listen to that. I wanted to tell you that I've been listening to that this week. I love music. We can do a music podcast.
There's five. We've got five now.
Yeah! Let's do it. The Yeti and Wheels Podcasting Network. Love Let's it. Go! Somebody get us a funding drop going for that. I want that to happen. Yes. But for right now, all we've got is this show. We've gone way too long. The little girl is waking up. We gotta go. You guys know where everything is. You know how to get in touch with us. But I want to mention, because I want to make sure that it's not broke, to go by the voicemail line at
509-GAME-210. It has been a while. 509-GAME-210. Let's just make sure things working.
Yeah, and you call, you talk to us. It will cut you off. When it does call us back, we'll splice it together. We'll do all that good stuff. We've got the Facebook. We've got the Twitter. You can email us. There's all kinds of different ways to talk to us, and we can't wait to hear from you. Right now, that's all we've got. Is there anything else, sir?
I think we're good.
All right, I'm Jamie. That's Tommy. This has been another episode of Gaming Uncensored, and we are out.
Would you like to submit a segment for the show? Send it to gaminguncensored@gmail.com. And don't worry, we'll play just about anything. Gaming Uncensored.